if you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension.
I found the gateway.
The Rewatch Podcast presents The Sliders Rewatch, dedicated to the series Sliders on Fox and Sci-Fi Channel. Join us each week as we continue crossing the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge and find ourselves in strange new worlds. Email your thoughts on each episode to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or on Twitter at rewatchpod. And welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast and our Sliders Rewatch. I'm Corey.
And I'm Tom, but hey, who cares? We got Mel.
Thank you for joining us again here. Of course, we're talking about two more episodes of Sliders, but before we get into what we're talking about, we need to get into some interdimensional corrections. Because last week, it turns out I was spending a whole episode saying that the episode was called Post-Traumatic Slide Disorder. And it's not the name of the episode.
And see, I wasn't sure when you said that. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess that's it. I couldn't remember. I thought it was PTSS. And then I was like, oh, well, maybe it was. I just forgot, you know?
So, yes. So we admit that it is, in fact, called Post-Traumatic Slide Syndrome, and I'm an idiot.
We're fallible. I know you guys thought otherwise, but we are fallible. Yes. We admit it here. We're coming forth and telling you right now. Yeah. It may happen again.
So this is a brand new segment on the show, but hopefully we can get rid of it now and it'll never rear its ugly head again.
Right, right.
I guess really I need to make another correction because I just said that we're talking about two more episodes of Sliders. And in fact, today we're talking about three episodes of Sliders.
Exactly. Three. It's a supersized episode of the Rewatch Podcast.
Yes, because we are rounding out Season 2. So we are going to be discussing In Dino Veritas, and then we are going to be talking about Greatfellas, and then capping it off with The Young and the Relentless. Our first episode, In Dino Veritas, written by Steve Brown, directed by Oscar L. Costo. This originally aired April 26, 1996.
Who do you think these people are, Professor?
Sort of a puzzle, isn't it? On our Earth, man and dinosaur separated by at least 65 million years. Now, sliding is never time travel. So the real question is not so much who these men are, but what on Earth dinosaurs are doing in the last twilight of the 20th century.
Yeah, I thought they always preferred the warmer climates.
Well, there's no conclusive evidence that they were cold-blooded. Perhaps they could live in any climate.
Well, wasn't a comet supposed to have raised some kind of dust cloud that killed all the dinosaurs? Maybe it missed the Earth here.
Possible. In any event, if dinosaurs are the dominant life form on this Earth, it'll be interesting to see what's happened to the humans.
We open the episode to find that our sliders have been living in a world where truth collars make it impossible to tell a lie of any size without an electric shock being administered. This could mean a huge lie, like covering up a murder you committed, to even simply telling someone you like their shirt when you actually do. Because of these collars, Wade is unable to hide the slider's story when a reporter asks them where they are from, and thus he comes to watch them slide to get footage for his TV show. The sliders slide with Wade landing in a nest of eggs, crushing them. As they look around and hear no city noise at all, just nature sounds, there's also no cityscape and just forest as far as they can see. Suddenly, a growl pierces the air and the sliders take off running. Arturo falls and injures himself, the timer falling unknowingly, as they try and find a refuge from an angry dinosaur. Wade, Remy, and the professor take cover in a cave while Quinn goes back to find the timer. In the cave, they discuss how humans and dinosaurs both can possibly be alive at the same time. A dinosaur attacks the cave and they defend themselves, but are stopped by a holographic park ranger who says they are under arrest for poaching in the San Francisco Dinosaur Preserve and Spotted Owl Sanctuary. When the ranger tells them she found the remains of a man elsewhere in the park, they fear the worst, that Quinn is dead. Wade tries to prove, using her truth collar, that they are not from this earth and that they are not poachers, to no avail, while Remy goes off to find Quinn. Instead, Remy runs into a dinosaur saved only by someone firing gunshots, the actual poacher, who meets him back at the cave, much to the ranger's chagrin. He proposes that if the sliders help him smuggle out dinosaur eggs and organs, used for healing and various other reasons, he will make sure Arturo gets the help he needs. The ranger pleads with the sliders to not help him, but the poacher blocks the ranger's signal. During the night, Wade manages to unblock the ranger and decides to go out to look for Quinn. As the poacher arrives and tries to get Wade back to the cave, Quinn shows up. When the poacher's gun fails, he is eaten by the dinosaur. The ranger appears, reporting that she has found the timer. The sliders plan an escape from the cave, elude the dinosaur, and activate the vortex, only to slide right into an actual excavation of an Allosaurus skeleton, accidentally crushing it.
Look, we've been talking, and I think we're going to take our chances here. Our friend might still be out there, and we've lost something that's really important to us, so...
Yeah, it's going to get us back home.
Let me make this real simple. I've been out in front of those steps for over 16 months. But thanks to you, the Forest Service now has a photograph of me. I'll probably wind up on America's Most Wanted, all because I saved your life. So the way I figure it, you owe me.
We are conscious of the debt we owe you, sir. And we are extremely grateful.
The hell is that?
Nothing. He's just not feeling too well.
Well, I couldn't care less how grateful you are. All I care about is I got $1 million worth of dinosaur parts in this cave, and I am not going to leave them here for the Forest Service. Now, are we clear about this?
Yeah. Perfectly.
Let's get some sleep. We got a long day ahead.
All right, so we have a tiny little bit of trivia here, not the onslaught that we usually have, but it's something.
There's a little bit here. There was a lot of different, extra lines here and there that they added in. Nothing worth really reporting, just extended scenes here and there. Nothing that added to the overall story, really. But there were two big things in the episode that they took out. And the first one was the reporter that Wade talked to in the very beginning of the episode. We see him come up. You know, he's kind of a younger guy, you know, and he has his cameraman there. Originally, that reporter was supposed to be Geraldo Rivera, you know, the guy from the whole Al Capone's vault thing, you know, expose type thing. So it was supposed to be Geraldo. And it was, the whole thing was supposed to take another path. Geraldo was going to slide with them. He was going to go into the next dimension with them because, to him, this is an amazing story. And ratings, you know, got his eyes all aglow. So he was going to actually go with them to the next slide. And then in the early part of the episode, he was going to be eaten by the Allosaurus. So it was a different, you know, a different way of doing it. But I guess they couldn't get couldn't get Geraldo to sign on or what, but for some reason they abandoned that idea.
Would have been funny though.
Oh yeah, it was really quite interesting to read. So definitely check it out at dimensionsofcontinuity.com, the Lost and Found section. They had the whole like first act, I think, was just about Geraldo, and he's very dramatic. Like as the sliders are walking, you know, he's narrating. He's like, "Our heroes are walking up the hill in search of wherever they are." You know, It was very well done, very well written, but for whatever reason, they decided to cut that out. Very good. The last thing that they had that they cut out was at the very end. We have the Allosaurus coming to get Quinn, and he jumps and slides through completely safe. But in the original version, what they were going to do, the Allosaurus was actually going to smack Quinn. It was actually going to like reach him and smack him into the vortex, and then the Allosaurus's arm was going to get caught in the vortex. So when they landed in the next dimension, the Allosaurus's arm was like, you know, cut off, and it came through the vortex and landed next to them, you know, like bleeding and bloody and everything. And I imagine they cut that because of like effects.
Allosaurus got tiny arms too.
So. Exactly.
Oh, look who's here.
Where have you been? Trying to get them to authorize a helicopter. Who's he? His name's Quinn. He's the one we've been looking for.
How about that helicopter?
I'm afraid not. The Archaeoptera are in rut. It's just not a big enough priority.
So we have to die so that baby Archaeopteryx can be born.
I did find your timer, though.
Great.
It's where you set at the base of the hill. The readout says you still have about an hour and a half left.
What about the Allosaurus?
She's a patient hunter. She can wait you out for days.
All this equipment. This guy's got to have something we can use.
Those bottles. What are they? Attractants and repellents. Are they labeled? No, just different colors. Oh, God, this got to be a repellent.
Oh, no more so than this. Have you any idea which is which?
If I could smell, I could tell you.
Well, that's something we wouldn't want to guess wrong on now, would we?
Flare gun and flares. A rope. A grappling hook.
Wait a minute. That might work.
All right, well, getting into our discussion of In Dino Veritas. So we open up and they're on this world that has, I guess, some sort of legal policy that everybody has to wear a truth collar.
Mm-hmm.
And it zaps you whenever you tell a lie. And we sort of get information as the episode goes on, but it seems like the worse the lie, the worse the shock that you get. Exactly. And it can actually kill you.
Oh, yeah. It's a little scary. I'm glad we don't live in that type of world. I mean, I don't think I've told any like major lies, but you know, sometimes people are like, "Oh, how do I look?" "Oh, you look good." And if you don't really mean it, you're in big trouble, you know? A little shock there. It's like, "Oh, you don't like it?" "No, I do." Oh, again, you know, it just that'd be hard to live in that society.
I think this is an interesting aspect of this episode because, you know, you'd think that they would really try to focus on the dinosaur aspect of it.
Right.
But there are these just little things scattered throughout this episode. We'll get into a couple more of them as we go on. But yeah, I think this is a nice touch, and especially in a world where they're in so much danger. And I think it really impacts Arturo a lot too.
It does.
Just being able to sort of comfort people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's not necessarily a lie. It's you're just trying to comfort someone, and they can't even do that.
I mean, there is a point later where he does. Like he says to Wade, you know, "That boy is okay. I feel it in my bones." And he doesn't get a shock. So he really does believe it, which is cool. What I was thinking about was for the truth callers. Now, this episode comes for us, you know, watching it in proper order. This episode comes after post-traumatic slide syndrome. If I was one of the sliders and we ended up on a world where we had to wear these truth callers, the first question that I would have said was, "Are you our Professor Arturo?" Because right there, we would have solved the whole thing, you know? And of course, you know, Fox, of course, switches things around. But yeah, you know, it's like, I that would have been my first question right there. "Hey, are you our guy or are you the other guy?"
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah.
Good thinking.
But anyway, so, all right, we slide in away from the truth caller world, and Wade breaks an egg, a giant egg.
Yeah, that's gross. She gets this yellowy inside on her, and there's no San Francisco.
There's no San Francisco, no sounds. It's just all forest.
I'm not sure we've actually seen a world quite like this, you know?
Right, I was thinking about that, yeah.
Undeveloped world.
Right.
I think we got like that tiny bit after the fever episode where they're in like a cannibal tribe. Something.
That's right. But,
right. Yeah, you know, it's about it of undeveloped worlds that we've seen.
Yeah, really at this point we're thinking, wow, maybe they've landed in a place where humans never evolved. It's just dinosaurs, which is kind of intriguing. But I mean, going back to what you said about how they focused on the truth callers, not the dinosaurs, I think it's good that they went the truth caller way, because even though it'd be cool to see dinosaurs roaming all over the place, like their budget, they probably just didn't have it in them. You know what I mean? So focusing on like the truth callers and doing more character stuff rather than special effects stuff, that's why I like this episode, because they focused on that more than, oh, the fancy, you know, dinosaur graphics that we can do at the time. Because they had the one dinosaur, but that was it.
Yeah, just the one Allosaurus. And even that looks a bit dodgy.
Yeah, a little bit.
A sci-fi show in the mid-90s with a limited budget, it's fine for what it is.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The thing that I thought was funny about this place they landed in, it's called the San Francisco Dinosaur Preserve and Spotted Owl Sanctuary. Like, where did the Spotted Owl come in?
What I mean, just these peppering of these little things, you know? It's like dinosaurs to them still exist, so there's big, like, wow factor about them.
Exactly.
So they're just another endangered species.
Right. That's
not unlike the Spotted Owl.
Like, when she was saying the name, I'm like, it's just going on and on. I'm like, the San Francisco Official National Dinosaur Preserve and Spotted Owl Sanctuary. Anyway, okay.
But immediately, the professor hurts himself. He falls over, breaks his ankle, or at least sprains it, and drops the timer in the process. So, again, it's like, it's that whole thing of, we don't know when we're going to slide. We don't know if we can actually get to the timer. And it's just making their problems worse. And then, of course, Quinn goes off to try and figure stuff out. And then he just disappears.
Right.
For the most part of the episode.
Now, if I remember correctly, I forgot. I was going to double check, but I forgot. I think the reason why Quinn goes off missing is because he was filming a movie. I think he was doing Jerry Maguire at the time. So they needed to let him go to film his scenes for that. And that's why they sort of wrote him out of this episode. I think, you know what? Maybe that's why they got rid of the Geraldo scene, because that really was Quinn and Geraldo together. And apparently there was a scene where after Geraldo gets eaten, Quinn is just like, Geraldo! It's like just a wild scream from him. Yeah, so that makes sense. Maybe that's why they cut that out.
Yeah, well, they do have this hunter character that comes in. Mm-hmm. And there's this whole thing about how the ranger, the holographic ranger, found the remains of somebody out there. So mm-hmm. like, oh, it could be Quinn. Oh, we don't know. And then the hunter apparently had a friend who was picked off by the Allosaurus or something like that. So you can see if that was the case with the getting rid of Geraldo and having to write out Quinn, that they had to sort of get the story back to a serviceable area.
Oh, yeah.
So that's where the hunter and his friend come into it.
So the episode goes on, and one thing I noticed when I was first watching it back in, what was this, 96? Like, I noticed that there was a lot of, like, changing of, like, the daylight and nighttime. In one scene, it would be dark. The next scene, it would be light. And I remember thinking back then, wow, what's going on there? Like, I didn't give it a lot of thought, but I noted it back in the day.
And it's kind of hard to tell at some points, too, because they are in a cave.
Right.
But you're right, you know, the hunter goes to sleep and they're standing around and things like that. It's just hard to gauge exactly what time of day it is at any given time.
Right. In the end, I figured, well, it's just production issues. They had, you know, maybe they had to just do certain scenes at a certain time because, you know, you can't always shoot exactly when you want.
They run into this hunter, but they also firstly run into this ranger. And I thought this was interesting as well, in that she's a hologram. So it's not like this world is undeveloped at all. They're actually probably a bit further along technologically than Earth Prime.
Oh, definitely. Using like holograms that actually look like real people. Like, you can't even tell. That's way beyond what we have.
And it's at the point, too, where like San Francisco wasn't even developed into a city because of the presence of dinosaurs.
Right.
And, you know, of course, they get into the whole thing about how dinosaurs and man are separated from living on Earth. There's millions of years between the two. So how did it ever actually come about that they exist in the same time period, let alone exist together today? And I thought that was really cool, because I think a lot of people kind of mistake the fact that humans and dinosaurs never actually lived at the same time.
Yeah, and mostly because of movies, you know, and things like that. And, like, you know, just they sort of perpetuate the whole caveman and dinosaur thing, you know. Even kids' books, you know, like, we have a kids' book here that we used to read when my kids were younger. And it was Danny the Dinosaur, something like Danny and the Dinosaur, and it was like a caveman and his dinosaur pet. You know, it's something that just, it's out there. That's what they do. So I don't know.
Oh, the Flintstones.
The Flintstones, yes, exactly.
Jurassic Park. Sort of.
sort of. So, you know, what I did like is because of the truth collars, like we said, they have these great character moments. We talked about Arturo's, but an even better one was Wade, her moment here, talking about when she first met Quinn and how that relationship has changed over the years. Because when we saw her in the first episode ever, she's following him around. And I mentioned this in the first episode, that she's kind of like following around like a puppy, you know? She's like, hey, Quinn, what are you doing? What are we going to do? You know? And then she even says herself in this episode that, that's how it started. That's how she started off, just this lovesick puppy, you know, crush. But that for her, it's developed into a true love. I really care about this guy. I don't want him to be hurt, which I thought it was really well acted.
Yeah, and I think this is the first inkling of maybe they're not going to be the Quaid that we want them to be, but more so that they are just, you know, it's almost like a brother-sister relationship in a way.
Right.
You know, they just have unconditional love for each other. Or she at least has unconditional love for him. And you're right, very well acted on Sabrina Loy's part.
And so then we come to the last scene, the teaser at the end, or the tag at the end, where it mirrors how the episode started, with them landing once again in a dinosaur-influenced environment. But this time, it's not like a living dinosaur, it's a fossil.
Yeah, well, it's better than having the Allosaurus stretch its arm through the vortex.
This is true. It is true, yes.
Still a little cheesy, though.
I think, you know, like, just thinking about it, if this episode were done in the first season, I think that what they would have done, I think they would have focused on Remy when he came through, and he would have turned to see, like, the skeleton head of Allosaurus, and he would have been screaming. That's how far he's come, you know? Like, they don't do that anymore. But that, when I was rewatching it, I was like, wait, does Remy, like, freak out when he sees it? Like, I could totally see him screaming, you know, back in season one. That's his character.
And, you know, we didn't really talk much about Remy as we're getting through the episode there, but he has a couple of moments this episode where he had a girl on his arm again, man Remy, and he's laughing about how can anybody have a relationship in this world. You know, he was surprised that she let him stick around because none of his lines worked on her because they're all lies.
Exactly.
And then later, of course, he goes out and goes in search of Quinn, and he gets confronted with the Allosaurus as well. So,
right.
But yeah, he does all right. He's got little side bits, nothing too
Nothing major.
And, yeah, nothing plot-wise that's driving anything forward, but he at least gets his moments, and you're right. They don't treat him like a fool. Cool episode, though, all around. I think just, like I said, all those little touches throughout to add to the specter of the dinosaurs was really well done.
And now it's time for another episode of Sassy Comebacks with Wade Wells.
You told the guys from Hard Copy about sliding?
What was I supposed to do? Fly and get electrocuted in front of 250 art patrons? I think not.
This has been another episode of Sassy Comebacks with Wade Wells.
All right, moving on to our second episode discussion today. The episode is Greatfellas, written by Scott Smith Miller, with story by Sean Clark and Scott Smith Miller, directed by Alan Eastman. This originally aired May 31st of 1996.
What are you people trying to do? You're trying to get me killed? Give me one good reason why I shouldn't pull out of this operation right now.
I'm not sure what you mean.
Oh, come on. The two biggest crime families in the western United States trying to put together the greatest gambling paradise since Monaco? And then the FBI just waltzes in and IDs me?
FBI?
Rembrandt Brown might as well have put a stamp on my forehead. U.S. government informant. Glad-handing me in front of every street hood, every murderer within 100 miles.
I can see why you're upset, but I think this is a case of mistaken identities.
A mistaken identity's nothing. It's ego. Now you tell Rembrandt Brown to wait for my signal before he starts showboating for the evening news. Otherwise, the only thing the press is going to be covering is our obituaries.
Okay, thank you. I'll pass that on.
All right. I got to do a double set at the doubloon tonight. Now, don't forget, you tell Rembrandt Brown to wait for my signal.
We start off with the sliders ready to slide out of a world in which lawsuits are as common as eating and drinking, only to land in a dimension where organized crime has been taken to a much higher level. Bugsy Siegel, a renowned gangster on our world, managed to turn California into an even more over-the-top version of Las Vegas. Prohibition was not repealed, and all the famous gangsters grew rich making bootleg whiskey, eventually dividing the country into competing territories. Two of those families are hoping to create the biggest gambling paradise ever by marrying off the daughter of one family to the son of the other. As the sliders slide in on the wedding, the mafia members recognize Remy. Remy thinks it's because of his celebrity singer status. Indeed, we find out that in this world, he is actually a crusading law enforcement agent trying to break up the crime families. And because he accepts their money as a token of appreciation for his appearance at the wedding, he has now corrupted this world's incorruptible Rembrandt Brown by taking a bribe. Quinn goes to see government informant Mel Torme to try and contact the real Rembrandt and his team of incorruptibles, but is pickpocketed, the dirty money stolen. Mel agrees to help him, but is seemingly killed when his car explodes. Quinn finds the girl who stole his money, and upon finding she lost that money gambling, he proceeds to count cards to win it back. Meanwhile, the intended bride has mistakenly come to Remy Prime for protective custody and with insider information about crooked politicians, something she discussed with Agent Remy previously, but obviously our Remy cannot help with. Arturo and Wade go to the FBI housed in an old warehouse due to low budgets, which Agent Remy uses as an excuse for not helping the bride and the Sliders. They then go to Biachi, who is running for governor, and receive his assistance, only to discover that Biachi is also corrupt and on the take, handing them over to the crime families along with Remy and Quinn, who are apparently captured as well. Outside the building, Agent Remy listens in via a wire, and once they get admission of guilt from Biachi, they bust in, and after a brief shootout, the day is saved and the Sliders leap.
So this may be pure speculation, but I believe these criminals are attempting to ally California and Nevada in order to secede from the United States. The federal government will not be able to stop it short of civil war.
I see. And what is it you would like for me to do about all of this?
Well, for one thing, you could start taking us seriously. And then you could do something to protect this woman's life, considering the risk she's taking.
Witness protection program ran out of money years ago. Can't do a damn thing to protect Miss Greenfield. So if she truly sent you here, please inform of that with my apologies.
Are you insane?
She might have better luck with District Attorney Biachi. State may still have some revenues.
He's on the take. This whole society is corrupt. That's why the Greenfelds handed him $100,000. They knew he'd take it.
Miss Wells.
One more accusation like that, I will put you in jail and bury you so deep they won't find you for years.
Mr. Brown, I do apologize for my young friend. She sometimes gets carried away by her enthusiasm.
You two keep talking about these things, you're both going to end up being carried away in pine boxes. You're messing in the devil's playground here.
Okay, so some trivia on this episode, a bit more than the last.
Yeah, so if you noticed in the when they slide in, they're all like separated by quite a bit. They usually land close together, but in this one, they were all in different sections of the wedding. You know, still close, but not as close as they usually are. Originally, they were supposed to leap inside of a church. The wedding was supposed to be inside, and it was going to be part of a huge casino. So when you saw them walk out later, you would notice the church was part of the casino. And they were supposed to slide into the area behind the altar. So they would be shooting out from different sides of the altar from where everyone was standing. So they changed it for budget reasons, is what they said, but they wanted to try to stay close to the original idea of coming out from different sides of the altar. So that's why they're in these different areas. Because I thought that was weird, too, when I first saw it. Because they're not landing together like they usually do.
Yeah, well, Quinn and Wade end up in the pool.
Right.
Remy exactly. Smashes through the arch.
Yep.
And the professor's kind of just whatever.
Yeah, and he's not even wet. He's not wet at all.
I just remember looking at it and thinking, John Rhys Davies didn't want to get in the pool.
Just like when they had to run up the stairs, you know, it's like, I'm not doing that. I will stand right here. Yeah, so that was the original idea. There was some extra lines about Ronald Reagan and his Alzheimer's, you know, in our world, how it's different in this dimension. There was a bigger conversation between the two crime families. They were talking about how the wedding's going to bring them together, talking about who's the guy who ratted them out, you know, because Remy found them. And then Arturo goes on talking about how this world compares to ours, and he started talking a lot more about Reagan and the Soviet Union and the similarities of what happens there in our world. There was more conversation between Mel and Quinn about the robbery, so it's not just a simple thing where Quinn comes in and says, this happened. They actually went back and forth a little bit more. And again, you can read all these little extra lines that don't really change the story that much. You can read these on dimensionsofcontinuity.com. And now here, this is the best part. This, this is one of those scenes I wish they could have kept in. The girl that steals Quinn's money. Like, at the end, we get this little tag. And this kind of goes with our discussion later, but it's a big part of the deleted scene, so we'll do it here. That girl, they have the tag at the end where she's sitting at the bar, and she looks remorseful. She looks sad about, you know, what happened with Quinn. And, like, I was always thinking, like, I don't really care about this girl at all. You know, like, why do we have this weird tag with her feeling sad or remorseful? I didn't get it. Well, apparently, originally, that girl was supposed to be Daylan Richards, that character from the, what was the name of the episode? Is that the one? It's the other one, isn't it?
Was it?
Because Time Again and World is the one that we're like, this is the one where time started going backwards as time goes by.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah, as time goes by. All right. So, yeah.
Well, we said in the episode that we always get the confused. We do. And I still can't remember.
Yeah, it's as time goes by. So, yeah, that's the one it was. So, yeah, it was supposed to be Daylan Richards, the girl in the bar, and Dennis, the husband from that episode, was going to be an FBI agent as well. So they were trying to bring back these recurring characters, which I thought would have been excellent. Because then, you know, at the end, when they do that tag with Daylan Richards, that tag scene would have had so much more impact if they had used Daylan Richards, because you knew her already.
Yeah.
You know, and in this episode, again, Dennis was going to be a dick. He was not going to be a good guy. He was actually the one who took the money. Like, Daylan got the money, and then Dennis was going to take it, and he was the one who's going to gamble it away. So he was just a jerk for the whole episode. You know, so it's consistent with the way they've treated him before. So yeah, I thought that would have been great if they could have done that. There's a note in the script that says, we need this guy who played Dennis, but if it's too much money, just get some local lowlife. That's what they said. Get some locally hired lowlife to play the guy. I'm like, whoa, okay, well, there you go. But it's actually, you can read the script. Again, go to the website and check it out. But I thought that this would have been really good to have in this episode. They might have needed to have, you know, they might have had to change a couple things, you know, with the way the story went, just for time, not for like content, but for time. But I thought that would have been a nice little tribute to that character, because she was a good character for Quinn. You know, they were good together.
Yeah.
And then finally, we have the last deleted concept was the reason for the marriage was not just so that they could have a gambling paradise. They originally, and this is big, they wanted to have Nevada and California unite so that they could get control of nuclear arms and secede from the United States and be their own country. That was the original idea, which I could see why they sort of changed that, because that's very big. That's a big story. And that disc that they had with the payouts was going to be nuclear launch codes.
It doesn't really fit.
No, it just seems like thrown in.
Hey, pal, you got the time?
Yeah, it's 4:15.
Is that all? It's early. It's still early. You know, they say a cat's got 9 lives. You place any faith in that old wives' tale?
Maybe. If you're a cat, wait a minute.
Just remember, the cooler the cat, the harder he is to kill.
Quinn, let's go!
Keep your nose clean, Quinn. Take care of yourself.
All right, so getting into our discussion. This episode kicks off when we get the return of Wade's journal.
Yeah, I like Wade's journal.
Which is good that they, you know, they don't start every episode with her little voiceover of her journal entry.
Right, you don't want it every episode, but it's good to just remind you that, oh yeah, she's keeping the journal.
Yeah, and we know how it came in handy, you know, back when they thought they were home. She was getting book and movie deals and stuff with it, so
right.
Yeah, it makes sense that she would keep it up.
The thing that I wonder about is, where does she keep it? You know, like when they're sliding, when they're in trouble or whatever, it just seems like it's hard for them, I imagine, to keep things from world to world just because they never know what's going to happen.
You know, I often thought that about sliders. I was like, why wouldn't they have some like backpacks or something like that, keep some right. survivalist gear in it or whatever. Because
mm-hmm.
they never yeah. know where they're going to be.
Exactly.
But you're right. Yeah. Where does she keep it? When she just stuff it down the back of her pants or something?
I'll stuff something back. I don't know. Yeah, no, a totally different tangent there. Anyway, we have in the first world that they show up in, there's a lawyer that comes up and talks to Remy and say, hey, you know, she's going to file this suit against you. That actor was Mr. Gale, the guy who played Mr. Gale from Into the Mystic. Mm. And he's actually, and I don't understand why they do this, because he had actual lines and everything, but apparently he was uncredited in this episode. Like his name, his real actor name, does not appear in the credits anywhere, which is odd. I don't know why they do that.
Yeah, I saw it too. I was like looking at it. I'm like, is that Mr. Gale?
I'm like,
why aren't they calling this out?
Exactly. But it was kind of cool to see him.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a cool world too. You know, it's not something you would dedicate an episode to.
Right.
But it was an interesting little starter in that.
Definitely.
Yeah, everybody is like a lawyer. Or they said like 95% of the country's in law school.
Yeah. And like, like the film reviews and everything.
That film review cracked me up. Like the critic couldn't bring himself to say that he either liked or disliked Paulie Shore.
You take no position.
And it makes you think, like, why would you print the review anyway? If there was going to be like repercussions from saying that maybe you didn't like him,
mm-hmm.
why would you take the stance of I neither like nor dislike him?
Exactly.
How about just not print the article at all?
Now, you know, that will tie in to something from the next episode that came up in the Messages in Time. Something called the Fairness Doctrine. So we'll talk about that when we get to that section. But yeah, that non-aggressive film review, I liked it and I didn't like it or whatever, back, you know, the wishy-washiness, that comes up a little bit.
Yeah, but they, you know, they're trying to get a burger. And I love this, you know, whenever they go to a world where they've got some cash to spend and, you know, Remy likes his food,
mm-hmm.
but they can't even buy a burger because they don't have any of their insurance info or a note from the doctor about their cholesterol levels. And then, of course, he taps a woman as they're walking away and says, sorry. Oh, yeah. And that's when Mr. Gale's like, oh, you shouldn't have apologized. That's placing blame on yourself. She's claiming neck injury. It's a great little starter.
We have the sliders sliding once again in full view of everybody. Everyone sees it happen again. And they don't really bat an eyelash at it. You know, they raise their guns, but not because they're sliding. Just because they're crashing the wedding.
You know, I don't know about this episode, really,
mm-hmm.
to tell you the truth. It's just, you know, all these mobsters and the haphazard way that they sort of get involved in the story. It doesn't pop, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're at this, like, mob wedding, and Mel Torme's there. Honestly, the main thing I wanted to know was, is Mel Torme related to Tracy Torme?
He is, yeah. He actually is related. That's his, Tracy is his son.
Right. So that's what I mean. Like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, well, Tracy Torme must have been like, well, I can get Mel Torme into an episode. Let's just write a whole episode about mobsters and I'll put dad in there, you know? And that's, and they just went with it from there. Nobody said this was a bad idea.
No. And that song was definitely a bad idea. It was written by Tracy Torme, but it was such a typical country song, which mm-hmm. They did on purpose, you know, I'm assuming. They weren't trying to pass it off as the, you know, the next big hit, but I was like, man, this song is awful.
Yeah, and the audience reaction to the song as well was, I was like, these people are, like, it's obviously just like a canned applause effect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like, all these people going nuts for it.
Mm, I did.
And I was just, it's almost embarrassing for Mel Torme.
Yeah, a little bit. Although I will say, I did like the scat singing that he did in the country music style. I thought that was unique. You don't hear that very often.
Like that. Yeah. Well, I'm not saying it was a bad song or anything. Or
right.
Mel Torme didn't do it justice. I just thought the reactions from the crowd there were right. so fakey. And it just made it seem like they need to like pay people to like Mel Torme or something.
Right.
But, you know, anyway, whatever. They crash this mob wedding, and straight away, they know who Remy is and that he is part of the Incorruptibles. And I love that Remy straight away is just like, oh, you know, they must recognize me. because I'm famous. The Incorruptibles. That's a great name for the group that I must begin in. And he almost blows Mel's cover because Mel is actually working for the Incorruptibles, gaining info for them.
So the sliders arrive. They slide out and they start walking out. And Arturo said something that I thought was just odd, and they never addressed it. But I was like, what was that about? Arturo's walking away and he says, a bit of wobble in the wormhole this time, Mr. Mallory. And that was it. There was like, Quinn never responded to it. No one made mention of it. I just wondered why they put that line in there. Because it was a bit odd. Like they could have taken that somewhere. I don't know what they were thinking. If it was just a throwaway line or what.
Well, maybe they were just trying to explain the reasons why Quinn and Wade ended up in the pool. Mm. Whereas Arturo and Remy went, Remy went flying and then Arturo just, I don't know where he ended up. He just sort of walks around and he's there. But yeah, maybe that's just their wave of the hand to have the reasoning why Remy went flying like that.
That's true.
But of course, you know, we get into the story and we get into all kinds of stuff about like Remy getting bribed and pretty much like ruining his alternate's reputation because they're called the Incorruptibles for a reason. They are part of the FBI, which is only small because this is a big mobster world. So You've only got this small little FBI agency. They have a reputation for being the ones who will go after the mob people.
Right. They can't be bought off.
Yeah, you can't buy them. You can't do anything. They are upholding the law. I kind of like Incorruptible Remy.
Yeah, definitely.
He plays it interestingly.
I said later on in the notes here that Levant just kills it in this episode. Like, he is really like when you see him talking to Arturo and Wade, like he is so dead on serious. You know, like he seems like a totally different character, like completely different. It's not just another version of Remy. This is someone who grew up in a whole different world and has a whole different outlook on things. Like his demeanor, his delivery was so different.
And, you know, we get into the alt history as well. And here, the alt history is the Prohibition.
Mm-hmm. It was never repealed.
Yeah. So you don't just have Las Vegas anymore. It's all the way up the coastline and into California. And
they became, the mobsters became so powerful because people wanted, you know, alcohol. So who has it? Just the mobsters. So they gain money, they gain power. And so the country, the country still has states, but the different regions of the country are ruled by these different mob bosses. That was a neat alt history, I think.
And I love the take on Vegas. You know, a lot of people make jokes about Vegas, about how you can find a poker machine anywhere in Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there's like one scene where Quinn's on the phone and he hangs up. And the phone itself is a poker machine as well.
Right. He just dials it. Nice. Oh, didn't win. Oh, well.
Yeah. You get one phone call and a pull.
Exactly.
On the poker machines. Yeah, it's pretty funny. But, of course, Quinn tries to play hero again.
He can't help himself.
Yeah, he wants to go and return the $100,000 bribe that they took. But he immediately gets pickpocketed.
I knew that was... When she kissed him, I'm like, oh, she's...
Yes.
I knew that. I mean, back in 96, I was like, yep, money's gone. And he's just like, he's all fine. You know, like, he's all happy. Like, she kisses him and puts her in the car, and he's smiling, like, you know, the cheesiest grin ever. He's like, oh, that was great. You know, and then, oh.
I don't know. He seems to always crop up in places where women are getting beat around.
He does.
And he has to go and do something.
It's his superpower.
But, of course, he's confronted by Mel Torme.
Mm-hmm.
About his cover almost getting blown, or quite possibly actually being blown. And he gets killed. They blow him up.
Apparently. Because he does show up later. He wasn't dead. But yeah, the whole thing is with TV, like, or even movies, like if they cut away for a second, then you know there's a chance. He got away. You know, it's like, if they don't cut away, then you're like, oh yeah, he's most likely dead. Unless it's a comic book movie, then there's always things that can happen. But in general, they cut away for a second, you know, like 2 seconds, then you hear the explosion. So you know, maybe he noticed, you know, like a bomb in the car or something. He was able to scoot out real quick or something. But yeah, for a moment there, you get the meow.
And the thing that was off about it, though, was that Mel was confiding in Quinn.
mm-hmm.
throughout the whole episode. Like, why wouldn't he approach Rembrandt?
Right.
Because they were apparently friends. You know, later, the incorruptible Remy talks about how, like, you know, Mel wasn't just an informant for the FBI. He was a dear friend of mine. And
mm-hmm.
I was like, then why did Mel go to Quinn?
Yeah, because on this world, Quinn was probably not a part of the Incorruptibles because we didn't see him. So, yeah, that good call.
Quinn, you know, starts counting cards as well. Like, he finds that this girl has lost all his money, save a, you know, a few thousand dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to go and count cards, and he gets kicked out. You know, I never understood this counting cards thing in Vegas. Like, I know it's, like, frowned upon.
Yeah.
But I was like, how can you kick someone out for being really good at a game?
Like, right.
It's an annoying rule, really. I'm sure it pisses a lot of people off in,
I bet.
In the Vegas area. But, yeah, it really is. It's like, we will kick you out if you do well. That's the message they're sending.
I mean, they'll do worse. Have you seen that movie, 21?
Yeah.
So they'll do worse in some cases. That's why I thought, man, they're pretty nice to Quinn just by saying, all right, get all the money you won and just leave. Take everything that you just, you know, took away from us and just go. We're not going to do anything else. I don't know the reason why either, because I don't think everybody can do it, but maybe enough people can do it that they would lose so much money if they did not enforce that rule.
It just seems like it should actually be against the law for them to prohibit people from playing just because they are that good at playing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But instead, it's something that just, like, never happens. This is, I'm talking about the real world. It's not just the movies, you know? It's,
mm-hmm.
It's just a very odd thing. For a business which is all about gambling, your entire business is a gamble.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's your own fault for inviting people to come and play if they're going to be that good at it.
Maybe someone out there knows why it's a rule. You know, there's a lot, like in this episode, there's obviously bringing up a lot of little nitpicks. That doesn't take away from my enjoyment of the show, but this one I was like, well, it's odd. They had a disc that had all the information about who they paid off and how much. Mm. Because, I don't know, if I was a criminal, I would not put that down anywhere. You know, I would just have it in my mind, you know, who I paid off, and because you don't want proof of that. But they have a disc, a convenient disc that lists every politician that they've paid off. Why would the bad guys have this? You know, like, why would they do that?
You know, again, it's like they need to come up with some story here.
Yeah, exactly.
And the story needs a resolution. So,
yeah,
they've got all this information on them and they can take that to the district attorney.
This episode did have a lot of like twists and turns. Like, you weren't sure who was on the take and who wasn't. Because at one point, you might have thought that Remy, or the incorruptible Remy, I should say, Agent Remy, was on the take as well. You weren't sure because of the way he was acting towards Arturo and Wade. But then we find out it's actually the district attorney who's corrupt.
Yeah, and the incorruptibles remain incorrupt. So.
Exactly.
And they hatch this plan, which kind of just comes together in 5 seconds.
Really quickly.
You don't quite know what they're doing, but it turns out that they've been surveilling them, waiting for the district attorney to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it all kind of culminates, in that it was just really a ploy to catch out the district attorney.
Right. Now, I was assuming, I think the way I looked at it this time, like the first time I watched it back then, I remember thinking, well, how'd they know where they were going to be? How'd they get the wire in on someone? Well, the wire was in on Quinn and Remy, because he goes back to the hotel room, the bride is there along with the guys with the guns. I thought those guys with the guns were part of the mob, but no, they were part of the FBI.
Right, yeah.
So that's how they got the wire.
Bait and switch on you.
Exactly.
You think they're in trouble, but they're not.
I got to say, this episode was Remy, Clavant did a great job. But this episode also saw the return of Clinton. His brother, his twin brother, was here in the episode. It's very odd the way they used them.
When there's two Remys, they've got Clinton there again.
Right.
The thing that threw me off
mm-hmm.
was at the end, when it was really obvious that it was the two of them, they had Clinton play Remy.
Yes.
And that was just really off-putting. Like, no, make Clinton the incorruptible Remy, the old Remy.
Yeah.
Never have Clinton play our Remy.
Well, yes, that's the whole thing. As I was watching the episode, I knew that he was in there. But as I was watching it, if you look... Clinton does not show up at all. He does not show up at all as anybody until they do the raid at the very end. That's the first time that you see Clinton. Every other time you see Agent Remy, it's Clavon. Every time you see Remy Prime, it's Clavon. But then at the end where they have to be side by side, Clinton comes in as Agent Remy. And it's so obvious when Arturo rescues him, he says something, like he says a line right there as they're taking off their ropes. And it's so obviously not Clavon's voice. Like it just sounds different. And then, when, like you said, when they go out there, then they're switched. And we have Clavon playing, you know, the agent and Clinton playing Remy Prime. It's like, why did they switch it up like that?
It's almost like Clavon was like, no, I'm having too much fun playing Remy.
Well, and then also when Clinton, this gets confusing. It's like Freaky Friday. When Clinton is playing Remy, you know, they shake hands or whatever, and he goes walking off. When they cut away to Remy Prime walking off, it's not Clinton then. It's back to Clavon playing Remy.
When he's about to jump into the vortex.
Right. It's like, did they think we were going to notice? Because I noticed back then. I was like, that's weird. Is that? Oh, yeah.
Still off-putting.
And then, of course, we already said Mel, you know, Mel did not die. And we talked about the tag ending, which to me on original watching was like, that's just weird. I don't care about this girl who stole his money. What is the big deal? But it makes much more sense when you think about, oh, that was supposed to be Dalen Richards. So there's an obvious reason why they had that tag ending in there.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, whatever. Like, why you gonna send her some money? And she turns out to still be a swindler anyway.
Well, yeah, exactly. But if it was Dalen, I think you'd have been like, oh, I see. I get it. Quinn still has that soft spot for her. It would have worked better. If only.
Yeah, and Mel not being dead again. I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
He has this monologue and he's like, yeah.
He really could. I mean, it was cool that they got Mel Torme, and they probably did get a little bump in ratings because of that, you know, like publicizing that. But I don't know. Like it could have been anybody, really.
And, you know, we did talk about it at the beginning, but they really talk up Mel Torme as well.
Yes, they do.
They tried to call Sinatra, but hey, we've got Mel.
We got Mel. That's all we need. Whoa. We got Mel. Hey.
So yeah, it's not the best episode of Sliders, unfortunately for me.
Right. No, it was okay. You know, it's just it wasn't one of my favorites.
Hello, Sliders fans and Rewatch podcast listeners. Well, here we are at the end of season 2. And before we move forward, there is one thing that both Tom and I agree should never have been omitted from the script. So without further ado, we present to you a dramatic reading of a scene provided by our friends over at dimensionsofcontinuity.com. Enjoy 29.7 years.
Man, that is the last time I do a good deed. The crying man gave that woman his all, and look at the thanks he got. Now, what was that about the timer?
It's been badly damaged. We can't open the gate at will anymore, so the professor and I did some calculations based on the helix spiral.
Felix who?
Helix. It's a 10-dimensional form of Witten's index theorem.
Oh, that.
It suggests there will be a single window of opportunity on each Earth we visit, a moment in time when the weakened powers of the gizmo will still allow us to access the gate.
The window he's referring to will be different on each Earth, mere minutes till it arrives on some, several months on others.
So you're saying we may have to wait months in some of these worlds before we can try and get home again?
Correct. We've re-rigged the timer to serve as a countdown device, telling us how long till the window on each Earth we visit.
What if the window comes and goes and we never access the gate?
Well, in that case, Mr. Brown, I'm afraid it's 29.7 years to the next opportunity. So that is a mistake we cannot afford. We must always be sure to be together at the appointed time, or else.
We're lucky we didn't miss the window on this world.
How far to the commune?
About 45 minutes, if we obey the speed limit.
All right, so for the first time, let's get into our third episode discussion. We are talking about what is meant to be the season 2 finale, The episode is titled The Young and the Relentless, written by T. Edward Anthony and Von Weisenhardt.
I'm thinking it's Weisenhardt. It sounds German.
Von Weisenhardt. With story by T. Edward Anthony, Michael X. Fornaro, and Von Weisenhardt. Directed by Richard Compton. This originally aired June 7th, 1996.
Wow. These clothes are so retro.
I know. This is so strange.
I know. This whole situation is a lot to take in.
There's so much I want to ask her. She's me, but she's not me. Obviously, we're not together like they were, but Quinn, if something happened to you, I don't think I could handle it. May I come in? My God, you look just like him. Mr. Gillette will take your wet clothes and have them laundered. How are you two doing?
We're still a little shaken. I think we're okay.
I've got to pull myself together and get dressed. I've got guests coming any minute. Guests? For what? We were hosting a party to lobby the state legislature for EduLearn.
EduLearn?
The public school system here is a national disgrace. It was QR's dream to give all Americans, rich and poor, a chance at solid education. He had developed a computer program so advanced it would replace the public schools and save the taxpayers billions. But now, I don't know what I'm going to tell these people.
Why don't you just tell them the truth?
You have to understand the big picture. This project was so identified with QR, it will die without him. He worked so hard on this. It breaks my heart. Excuse me.
Our heroes slide into the backyard of a very expensive looking house, only to find its owner, QR, face down, drowned in the pool. They then meet a distraught sexy Wade, who is QR's wife here, and our group explains parallel worlds to her. She asks Quinn Prime to take QR's place at a party for EduLearn, QR's invention to help educate children at home, replacing a failing school system. This quickly becomes extended to include a presentation to the governor as well, with QR's friend Kyle using the timer, stolen by Sexy Wade's assistant, Gillette, as leverage for his cooperation. Quinn starts to learn from various people that EduLearn may not be all it's cracked up to be, being more about promoting brands rather than true education, and that he and Wade are being sued for the death of an employee, rumored to be a possible murder. Indeed, his relationship with Sexy Wade becomes strained as he starts checking up on her stories and finding holes. Remy and Arturo learn that in this world, anyone older than 30 are seen as second-class citizens, looked down upon by the youth as useless and having nothing to contribute. They experience it firsthand when they are refused service at a bar for being overage. The situation quickly escalates, resulting in the two being arrested and put on trial for curfew violation and assault. The attorney takes the easy route, not really trying to make a case, and gets them the standard 30 days in jail. Arturo fakes a heart attack while Remy takes out the guard, allowing them to escape and take refuge in a homeless shelter. They are discovered there by the aforementioned attorney and brought back to trial again, but not before Arturo and Remy appeal to her sense of duty, actually trying to do a good job, which leads to her pleading their case by investigating the incident and arguing with passion, getting them released rather than sentenced. Quinn and Wade Prime decide to play Scooby, investigating the possible murder, and find evidence that Sexy Wade may have been involved. Before they can act on a plan to get the truth, Gillette arrives to take them to Kyle, who is outraged at Quinn's actions but is quickly shut down as he sees a video of Wade Prime posing as Sexy Wade and admitting to the murder of the employee to get QR a seat on the board, and of murdering QR as well because he was having an affair. Sexy Wade is livid about this turn of events, but like Kyle, is shocked to see a video with Quinn and Wade Prime reenacting QR's murder. Even Sexy Wade's assistant Gillette is in on the plan, having been named chief beneficiary in QR's newly adjusted will. After a brief shootout and a fight, Sexy Wade is taken into custody. Our sliders unite and slide out, lamenting that they can't save every world that they land on.
Maybe we got away with it.
He knows?
Well, I had to tell him. It was too important not to. Now relax, okay? You were great. Quinn, shouldn't we be going?
Let me propose something. I think we're gonna be okay with the legislature, but, you know, it would really put us over the top if QR could be there to lobby the governor on Friday.
I want to be helpful here, but we had some pretty close calls tonight. I think we've taken this about as far as we can.
Well, what if I told you I have something that I believe you need to continue your journey?
Kyle, don't do this. He helped us.
Yes, and he'll help us again, guaranteed.
Give me the timer back, man. It's of no use to you.
Wade, please.
You're not dealing with her now. You're dealing with me. You get the big picture? Look, we do this my way, or you end up floating in a pool a second time tonight.
Okay, so we do have a bit of trivia on this episode.
We do. And as usual, there are little bits and pieces of dialogue that get cut out. Nothing that's changing the story. But there was a big change here with the girl who comes up to Quinn and asks him, you know, I thought you were supposed to tell Wade about us. That girl's name was Margot, and she was supposed to have a lot more scenes. There was actually going to be an affair with QR and Margot. They were supposed to be getting it on. There were going to be some scenes of them getting a little bit closer. Some lingerie was involved, and it was a whole thing that would have been fun to see, but didn't. They went a different way.
I recognize the actress actually from The Faculty. Do you remember that movie?
I did not see that.
With Elijah Wood.
I remember it's about the teachers are they're not humans or something.
Yeah, like an alien invasion, right. Body snatchers, mm-hmm. Kind of thing.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, and she was in that. So I was a bit surprised, like, oh, yeah, that's just a bit of a small role.
She originally had a very big part, and there was a part where Margot was hitting on Quinn Prime, thinking it was QR, and Wade walks in on them. You know, Wade Prime walks in on them. And, she doesn't care because she knows that it's not QR, it's Quinn. And so they start having a conversation about what's going on with this murder and investigation and everything. And Margot's, shocked that Wade isn't, absolutely livid. You know? It's you guys are taking this so cool. Oh, my God. You know, it was a good scene. So definitely check it out. Yeah. But, yeah, they just cut that for whatever reason. Maybe time, I imagine, because there was a lot of stuff in the episode.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was another scene where Kenny, he's the guy who said to Quinn, he's like, you know, Edulearn is not, it's bogus, you know, it's not what it's supposed to be. There was a scene where he tries to get the upper hand on Kyle, saying, you know, I know that's not QR. I don't know what you did, but something weird's going on here, and I'm gonna tell someone about it. But Kyle, apparently in some dialogue, says, well, you know, I had Gillette do some digging, and it turns out you're not under 30. You're actually 34, aren't you, Kenny? And then Kenny backs off because obviously he would be forced into retirement at that point.
Mm,
so that's another little thing left out. And then we have this part in the homeless shelter where Remy and Arturo end up, and there's a lady that comes in and sits down next to them. There was supposed to be a whole conversation with that lady. Her name was Joanne, and they go into her backstory about her being a city finance manager, but then she, you know, reached the age requirement for retirement, so she was forced into retirement. You know, she was living with her kids for a while. She can't get another job because they're hiring 70-year-olds who will work for overtime for free, you know. So there was a whole thing with that, which I thought was kind of neat. But obviously, just for time, we don't need to introduce a whole other character. There's one more part that I had to mention, because when Arturo comes, when they come back into the courtroom, he says, you know, what do you plead? And Arturo says that he pleads guilty, but with an explanation. And then Tiffany, our lovely attorney, comes in and says, you know, can I, you know, say something? in the original script, there was an explanation that Arturo was giving, and it was great. So it's on dimensionsofcontinuity.com. And just real quick, I've got to do this. He says,
"Guilty, sir, but with an explanation. We are guilty of having faces filled with lines and wrinkles. Guilty of aging to perfection like a fine wine. On my world, we also have a society that tilts shamelessly toward the shallow virtues of youth. The point is, youth has its virtues, energy, cleverness, but with age comes wisdom, and with wisdom comes compassion and mercy. I ask you, Your Honor, to use your good judgment, but temper it with mercy." And then the judge sentences to, you know, go back to jail. So it didn't really work, you know, but I could totally see, you know, John Rhys Davies, you know, just delivering that, like, you know, as he does. Perfect. Yeah.
All right, then. How do you plead?
Guilty, sir, but with an explanation.
Your Honor, may I approach?
Tiff. What's up, babe? The buzz is you no longer represent these antiques.
She still represents me, Your Honor.
Your Honor. New information regarding the original charge of trespassing has come to my attention. According to Article 3, Section 5 regarding eating establishments, I quote, "Signs refusing service are required to be posted in a location clearly visible from the exterior of said establishment. As you can see from this photo, the lamplighter has no such sign. There was no way my clients would have known they were overage. So therefore, I request the charge of trespassing and all related charges be dismissed."
Bummer. Looks like you're right. Nice work, Foxy Lady.
Girl, you just pulled a rabbit out of a hat.
Em, seems like I owe you a favor.
No, guys. I owe you. What you two said at the shelter, it really opened my eyes to a few things. So I hit the books and did some digging. I guess when you're up to your ass in alligators, you tend to forget that your job is to drain the swamp.
All right, well, getting into our discussion of this episode. So they find this guy drowned in a pool, you know, in this nice lush mansion and everything. And it's Quinn. And, you know, I love the actual opening shot of Quinn floating in the pool. As well, because, you know, although it kind of spoils the surprise when they finally get him out of the pool, it was a really nice shot.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, they quickly get involved in what's happening. Again, it's a little convenient that they slide right into the backyard of Quinn's alternate. But, you know, here in this episode, I can look past that because the story's interesting and it actually gets pretty suspenseful as it goes along.
It does. There's a lot of twists and turns in this one, too.
You know, the first big one, Quaid is for real in this
Quaid
world.
Is for real. Oh, yeah. It's so good. It's so good. Finally, what people have been saying all along, you get to see that, sort of. And I will say that Sabrina was just awesome in this. Like, her two characters, Wade Prime and Sexy Wade, they are completely different characters, just like Remy and Agent Remy in the last episode, really did a great job. And, like, this is what, like, we didn't get a lot of in the first season. We're really seeing Sabrina and Clavant really step up, you know, being given a lot more to do, which is really cool, really cool. And this is also the first real alt-Wade that we've seen. We had one in the pilot that was, you know, the one that got killed right away. So we didn't really get to know her, but this is the first one where we actually see another Wade that's, like, so different.
Yeah, you're right. You know, even in the world where they thought they were home.
Mm-hmm.
Her alternate had slid, you know, so yes. You could say that they were possibly very similar.
Right, right.
Because, you know, they fooled her parents, but
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. This is the first time where we're actually getting an alternate Wade. So Sabrina Lloyd has to step up and play two characters. And she does a fantastic job.
Yeah, it's done really well. I mean, I'm not even talking about the wonderful hair. She just did a good job with the acting and everything, and just how she played her was like really like she was a very sensual character, you know, so different from our little perky, you know, pixie Wade.
Yeah. And I think the clothes actually play into that, you know, in this world where you have to make it by the age of 30 because, mm-hmm. you know, that is the retirement age. You get all these like young flourishes into the modern world, you know? So rather than like a nice suit or something, you get this black and white checkered suit. And Quinn calls out that the clothes are so retro, man. And it's that kind of thing of like the young love to go retro. I know I do. I'm a big fan of, you know, maybe not over the top 80s attire, but, you know, I like to get some nice 80s clothes sometimes and put those on, you know. It's that feel, you know, that people call them hipsters today. I don't by any means call myself a hipster, but
I think we need pictures. I think we need pictures up on the Facebook page of retro Corey, 80s Corey.
Yeah. No, I dig that stuff. I love going to like a thrift shop or a secondhand shop and finding a good bit of old clothing.
Definitely. I mean, I like the old stuff. I like the idea, even though I don't have it. I like the idea of how back in the even older days, the 50s, and you know, they were wearing, like the men wear suits and hats. You know, like when I was in high school, I had like a fedora hat that I used to wear, you know, because I was like, I felt like it was because I was a big fan of Sinatra back then. Sorry, Mel, I was a big fan of Sinatra. So I had this hat that I bought, and I was like, I felt like I was like, you know, back then, you know, and I would wear some vests, you know, I never really had a nice suit like they would wear. But yeah, I get you. I get you.
Yeah, so I think it's a great touch for the episode because, well, not only do you get like an old style, a retro style for their just casual wear, but, you know, when they're at a party or in the office or something like that, it's kind of a bit over the top. And it's kind of what young people do, you know, we love to do stuff like that.
When they mentioned the whole age 30 thing, the first thing my mind went to was, is this kind of a tribute to Logan's Run? Now, it's obviously not like some of the direct ripoffs we've had, or sorry, tributes. It's not a direct tribute like some of the other episodes, but just a little bit of, you know, just like a nod to Logan's Run, the whole age 30 thing. Because of course, in Logan's Run, once you turn 30, you're renewed, but we know what that means.
Yeah, you die.
Right. So in here, I thought that age 30 was an interesting cutoff age. Maybe just a little nod there.
So you can see the kind of pressure that people are under. And that is what's going to get us into the main story. This whole murder plot must be successful thing that the sexy Wade is caught up in. And she manages to talk Quinn into filling in for QR because, you know, straight away it kind of feels odd for everyone else that she wants to go ahead with this party that they're having. You know, all the business associates are going to be there and her husband's just died, but instead she's thinking, oh, but you're here. You can just fill in for QR.
She's conniving. I got to admit, I kind of like that. I wouldn't want that in my own relationship, but for a movie, I'm like, I like it. I like where you're going with this.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's an interesting party, really, you know. All this stuff about how, like, all these guys are coming up to Quinn and they're sort of giving all this information about, you know, are you on board with Edgelearn? And then there's Kenny who's like, man, you know, you don't want to do this. Edgelearn's a dud. And the whole time you got Sexy Wade in the background sort of like mouthing things at him, telling him what to do. So you can tell that she's trying to puppet him into her plans.
And then we come to the story with Arturo and Remy, which is like a whole different thing. It's related, of course, but they go off on their own little adventure. And the thing that I thought was interesting is because in all these other episodes, Arturo's, we must not get involved. Let's lay back and wait until the slide. And then in this episode, Arturo's like, F it, and punches the bartender. It's like, hell with all this. It's like, whoa, okay. They do a good job, of course. You know, they really kick ass in that bar fight. But still, it's like, wouldn't the better decision have been just to walk away? You know, like you're always saying, Professor, lay low.
Yeah, I think it's good for Arturo here. I mean, Remy to an extent, because, you know, they say, you know, oh, don't worry, Quinn, we'll have you back at the party. And Sexy Wade goes, you know, QR didn't have a lot of senior friends. So you could understand, Arturo's getting to the senior age, but Remy's probably what? Mid to late 40s.
Yeah.
So it's a bit off for him. But you're right. You can see where Arturo would be very annoyed by this because in his world, he's a very respected professor. And
exactly.
Yeah, in this world, he's delegated to a second class citizen and he's got all these young kids telling him what's what. So that's not going to bode well for him. So yeah, so when he's in this bar and they're refusing him service because, you know, curfew's coming up or they just don't want seniors in there, yeah, he's going to get a bit annoyed. But man, they do. They kick ass.
They did a good job. It was almost like you're watching like a buddy cop movie, you know? So that leads us into a little bit here of the teenage legal system because they have to go to jail because they get caught. Yeah, definitely. It's an odd thing.
The judge being like this, like
a surfer dude or something.
Yeah. Like a surfer who listens to Nirvana or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's just flirting with their lawyer.
Exactly.
Tiffany. You know, they give her that perfect, that's a perfect they did. Name for
Yeah, they nailed all aspects there because they're like, it's a Debbie Gibson wannabe. And then her name is Tiffany. Perfect.
So yeah, it goes on. But first, you know, we're back at the party, or well, the party's ending.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this guy Gillette who had stolen the timer while laundering their clothes for them.
Right.
And it turns out that Gillette has done this for Kyle.
Supposedly, yes.
And I was like, hang on, doesn't Gillette work for Wade?
Yeah, because Wade called him on the phone. He's like, please get over here as soon as you can. You know, like, I haven't called the police yet. I need your help, you know?
Yeah. So suddenly it was just a bit off-putting. I just assumed that he was like a staff member of Wade's or, you know,
right.
He just worked in the house, like a butler or something. I don't know. But
apparently not.
Yeah.
And even that deleted scene where I told you about where Gillette works for Kyle trying to get some dirt on Kenny. Again, Kyle's given him jobs to do, so who is Gillette, you know?
Yeah. And Gillette looked like he was over 30.
Oh, definitely. He's definitely over 30.
Yeah. So I'm like, why did they employ this guy in a world where people don't like or trust what they call senior citizens, people over 30? The dude looked like he was at least 40.
You know what I thought? I was wondering why, like, what they should have done was they should have had Gillette played by Mr. Gale.
Yeah.
And had that reoccurring character again. I'm a big fan of those reoccurring characters. And, like, we've lost Pavel. We've lost the lawyer from TV. What was his name? We lost that guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've lost so many great recurring characters. So it would have been nice to have seen Mr. Gale in that role.
But, yeah, you know, this is where it really starts to turn. And you're still thinking that maybe Wade is, you know, she's not a bad person. Yeah,
right.
She kind of has, like, the reaction to Kyle where she's like, Kyle, don't do this, you know.
Exactly.
He's helping us, and you're thinking Kyle's the bad guy. But, you know, it's a slow unravel of the sexy Wade's involvement.
And, you know, speaking of Kyle, like, look at Kyle, all right? And then you look at Quinn standing next to him in the one scene. It's like Quinn could, like, break him with, like, one hand, you know? Kyle is so, like, short and tiny and just thin. And Quinn, you know, he's a geek as well, but he's definitely more well-built. You know,
yeah.
He's taller and stronger. I'm like, why are you letting him boss you around, man? Come on. You know, just just take him, put him against the wall, get the timer back, you know?
Yeah, but convenience.
Anyway, so we're back to Arturo in the homeless shelter. And the woman comes up and sits down next to him. I just thought this was a neat little touch. And because Arturo stands up when the woman comes over to sit down, which is what, you know, good manners and everything. That's what you're supposed to do when a lady comes. You stand up and wait for her to sit. There's, you know, I thought that was a neat little thing to throw in there. Gives Arturo a little bit of class.
I loved how they ended up there, too, is that he faked a heart attack.
Right.
And again, they kick some ass. Like,
oh, yeah, they do. They do.
And Remy picks the handcuff locks, too.
Uh-huh. I know. I mean, it could be like a whole nother series, you know, Remy and Arturo on the run or something. Really good.
Yeah, it is kind of cool that they team them up from time to time. Remember back when we were saying, you know, when they were really starting to develop Remy's character, when they were on the prison San Francisco and he and Arturo have that scene with the guy calling him Fish?
Right.
It's kind of like where that kind of team up was started.
Definitely.
Of Remy and Arturo together, so... Yeah, I'm trying to remember if we get more of it moving forward.
I can't remember.
Because we don't have Arturo left.
Yeah, if we do, it's not going to be for much longer.
Anyway, you know, moving on. They're in this meeting, and they're talking about Edgelearn. And it is the dumbest invention ever.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. Unless they were showing us like a kindergarten version or something, you know.
Yeah.
It is really bad.
Yeah, it is just an outright advertisement for Impact Cola. Not even subtle advertising whatsoever. I mean, these people need to work on subliminal advertising of some kind, because this was just dumb.
Right.
So I can understand why Quinn calls it out.
Mm-hmm.
And Wade tries to sort of, you know, catch the ball and roll with it, where she's like, yeah, you know, it needs a bit of work. I'm with you, QR. Still trying to play up the good guy angle.
Oh, yeah. I wonder what the real QR thought about the whole thing. Because it's like, it's just so bad. You know, it's obviously, yeah, Impact Cola. If I have 5 bottles of Impact Cola and I drink 1 bottle of Impact Cola, how many bottles? It's like, oh, really? That's pretty, I think I can figure that one out.
There was an episode of The Simpsons, and I think it was the first time they actually looked into the future, and you saw future versions of the Simpsons characters.
Mm.
And it was Troy McClure pretty much doing the same thing. He's like, if I have 2 Pepsis and drink one Pepsi, how much more refreshed am I? That's what it made me think of. And the little girl's answer is just, Pepsi? Yes, partial credit.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, the advertising of Impact Cola, because they said in there that it was, the funding was from Impact Cola. They paid for them to actually research, you know, EduLearn and put it into effect. So they are, it's, you know where they're getting their money from.
I understand they've got a failing school system, but replacing it with this would be the dumbest idea in the world. At the end of the day, Quinn and Wade kind of figure out the whole ruthless plot and how the sexy Wade was probably in on it. She may have actually even killed QR, or at the very least had Gillette do it. But then it throws me off because they actually get Gillette in on blackmailing sexy Wade and make him the beneficiary of QR's will. And Gillette even says, you know, well, I know where QR's body is because I put it there. And I was like, whoa, man, like, you are a bad dude. Why are the sliders working with you and rewarding you? Ugh.
Right. Well, I thought it was a good turn, though. I liked the idea that, you know, it was definitely good that, because I wasn't like, I was thinking like, how can they get out of this? I had a feeling that they would do the whole switcheroo, you know, with Quinn and Wade acting out as, you know, their alternates. But I was like, how are they going to actually do this? And so Gillette never occurred to me that they would use him.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I love how they wrap it all up. You know, they make videos and things like that with confessions, and then fake the fight in the pool where she whacks him over the head. And I love that Kyle says, please, that's not Wade. That's her double in a bad wig. I can get people in here to verify this, you know, video forensic experts and stuff like that. I'm like, who cares if you can get video forensics in here? They're the same damn person, you idiot. This isn't computer-generated trickery.
Right, exactly.
Try all you may. But, at the end of the day, I thought the plot was good. They get out of it. It still sticks with me that they did the deal with Gillette because he was a bad guy, but whatever.
Right.
And it feels like a better season closer.
Yeah, it's just, and especially the line about what the professor says, that you can't save every world that we go to, you know, obviously. But yeah, I like that. Now, I don't know if you noticed or not, the musical transitions between the scenes were not the usual orchestral type stuff. They were like rock music, you know, a little grungy, you know, guitar and drum type thing.
Yeah, I did notice. It was very 90s, but
it was very nice. It's very nice because it's very cheesy, you know, like when we watch the episodes where it's instrumental, you know, between the scenes, it doesn't feel out of place. It feels very natural. But yeah, definitely the music felt a little bit like, oh, okay. I actually thought it reminded me of that episode where they did that rap. They had that rap video with the library song or whatever. I thought we were going into one of those because I just forgot about it. But no, yeah, it's definitely very dated.
But appropriate.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and it's pretty good for stock music.
Oh yeah, definitely. There was a thing here that I had never noticed before, but it bears putting it here. Apparently, in the credits, there is a Cro-Mag credited as being in the episode. There was an actor who was credited as being a Cro-Mag, and obviously, we did not see a Cro-Mag at all in this episode. For whatever reason, he was credited. They filmed a scene. They did film a scene with a Cro-Mag. And the way it was supposed to go was the Cro-Mag was going to interrogate Gillette. And the idea was to have another Gillette from another world that was going to be spying on the Sliders in this episode. So he was going to replace the original Gillette. And apparently they filmed it. And Tracy Torme said, you know what? This doesn't work. He said it didn't look good. Production-wise, it was just not good. But really, I'm not sure if that's why they actually cut it. I think they cut it because this episode aired before Invasion did because of, you know, Fox, what they do. So I think that's really why they cut it.
Well, it would have been interesting because, you know, quite frankly, we have not heard anything else about Cro-Mags outside of the episode Invasion.
Exactly. So it would have been neat to have had just a little tag in there, especially having that tag at the end of this episode. If they had shown it in order as the final season ender, it would have been neat to recall back to Invasion.
Yeah, sort of tag it for future reference. Just say, exactly, we're not dropping this. Yes, we've had the one episode, but we're tagging this because we're moving forward into new seasons and we're going to use it. So it would have been good to see. Yeah.
And I just, you know, this episode, I like this episode really simply because it's sexy Wade. Long-haired Wade, the long flowing locks. I just want to... Anyway, I won't go into that here. I'm going to save that for my own private time later on. There's an image for y'all.
Well, Professor, you were right.
About?
About never getting involved with the locals. We don't know what we're getting into.
Well, like it or not, all the doubles we meet on these worlds are essentially us. They've just made different choices. Some will be glorious, and some will be wholly despicable.
What have we got there?
You okay?
I just don't understand what went wrong, you know? But I've had everything.
All right, people. Here we go.
What happened to that Edulearn project?
Who knows? Maybe with the bad publicity, the governor will think twice, and the public schools will stay open another couple years.
Can't save every world you land on.
All right, well, let's move into some messages in time.
All right, so we'll start with messages in time for the young and the relentless. And one of the biggest conversations I saw back then was people were saying that Howard Stern was not popular in the 80s when he would have run for president in this timeline. So it's something that probably wouldn't have happened. And they went off and they started debating about Stern's political affiliation. He was apparently a libertarian candidate in our world at one point, but ended up bailing when he saw, well, there's a lot more to this than just saying I'm going to run for president. So he bailed on that. But the biggest thing that came up was what I mentioned from back in Lawyer World. They had said, you know, this reviewer takes no position. You know, some say he did a good job, some say he didn't. There was something that was put into place back in the 40s, and it was called the Fairness Doctrine. And it was a ruling that said talk show hosts could not just say whatever they want. They had to present topics in a fair and balanced way. So if there was something controversial, they had to present both sides of the matter and not give their opinion on it. So that was around the late 40s, and it existed all the way to the 80s when Reagan's cabinet overturned that because they said, well, that violates free speech. So there's no way we can have that. So they got rid of it then. So it was kind of neat to learn about it because I had no idea that even existed. That if you were a radio broadcaster, you couldn't just say your opinion on things. You had to give both sides of the story. So related to the lawyer world episode. I thought that was neat.
Well, at the same time, you know, kind of going with the film review aspect that was in the episode, I'm not a big fan of reading reviews by an individual. So if it's just like a critic in a newspaper or on a blog or whatever,
right?
I'm not a big fan of that. I actually kind of like to see the good, fair, balanced reviews where two or three people have a conversation about it. You know, there's a reason why you and I are hosting this show, and it's not just one person.
Oh, yeah.
Because you get a nice balance of opinion.
Let's see. Also, someone had said that when Gillette comes to take Quinn and Wade in the car when he shows up in the back, after he does that, there's a commercial break, and people are like, what the heck? Like, that was a weird place for a commercial break, they felt. Because when they come back, they're in the scene with Kenny, or with Kyle. So it's like they thought, did we miss a scene here? What happened? They understood quickly because they explained it, and they showed the videotapes that they made and how Gillette helped them. But at the time, they were like, did I just miss something? Because we just skipped something, it seems like. So they were a little confused. They liked the changing of the will, getting Gillette to help them. Someone, which I thought was odd, because we have them all over the place here in Phoenix. There's a lot of them. Bike cops. People are like, what, bike cops? The cops are on bikes? Why are the cops on bikes? You know? And like at first I was like, well, bike cops are normal. And a lot of people said that. But then someone made the point, yeah, but bike cops in hilly San Francisco, you know, that, you know, there's hills, they said, that some cars have trouble getting up. So what about bike cops? I understood better where they were coming from with that.
Well, at the same time, it's supposed to be a world of young people. Yeah, so.
Right. They're young. They've got the energy.
Yeah.
I'd be like, no, give me a car. So, and they liked this world because it was not just another movie ripoff. It was... The episode story was driven by the world, where it's a youth-focused world. And going on with that, someone said they didn't like the idea. I think I forgot to put it in here. They didn't like the idea that it was so young of a people. Like, it had to be under 30. They thought it might have played better if they had said it was just youth-focused and not, like, teenage, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-old. You know, I said it might have been a better episode if they had focused just on the youth aspect and not the really young teenage, early 20s. And I agree, that might have been a little bit more realistic than just cutting it off at age 30.
Yeah, well, I think the age limit sort of really plays up the stressful nature.
Oh, definitely.
And the reasoning behind, you know, what Wade was into with the whole plot, you know, it's very stressful to get to a high place where ostensibly you need to make enough money to live the rest of your life after 30.
And that's not many years, you know?
Yeah, so
it's not many years at all.
You can see that she and QR had done very well for themselves. They had a very nice house.
Right.
But it must have been very stressful to get to that point by 30.
There was, even back in the 90s, there were trolls on the internet. There's someone on the board who people were talking about the whole Cro-Mag being credited. There was a troll on there who said, oh, no. If you play it back in slow motion, you'll see a portal. And then people were like, really? Where? And like, does anyone have a tape? Can you send me a tape? I want to see the tape. We got to find this portal. Like, guys, he's totally dicking with
you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you couldn't do that today. It'd be just like, well, give me a screenshot.
Exactly. Couldn't do it today. But back then, people were like, oh, my God, there's a portal somewhere. We got to find it. Something that they said, which I did agree with, they're getting tired of the plot device of the timer being stolen. It's kind of like in Star Trek when the transporter just breaks and they can't get him back through the transporter. It's like, you know, it's like an easy thing to do and it creates drama, but it's like you get tired of it when you have it happen so much. And you consider these three episodes, it happened in the dinosaur episode. They lost the timer, so there it is. And then in this episode, it gets stolen. It's gotten stolen before as well. So it's like they're getting a little tired of that. But then, by the same token, they suggested, what if they went to a world where pickpocketing was like legal? You know, major crimes are still bad, but pickpocketing is like a normal thing that happens. And if you're dumb enough to get pickpocketed, then you deserve it. And they said it could have been a whole thing where the timer gets stolen again and again and again and passed around until finally the sliders are able to retrieve it from like the original guy who stole it. Yeah, I thought, well, that's an interesting storyline. All right, so let's go backwards and go Messages in Time from Greatfellas. We had some people saying, boy, you know, Wade looked awesome in that half tied up shirt. And I agree, because there was a scene where she's running out and she has the shirt tied up. I'm like, oh wait, I don't remember seeing that before. Yeah, that's a good scene, guys. Now just add the long hair to that, and I am set. other people did notice that Sliders seemed spread out when they arrived on this world here. Someone else, and we talked about this, they were confused about the Oracle's warning, you know, saying, oh, I see where they're going, you know, from the last episode of Obsession. And they were still kind of confused because not everyone realized that they were still showing them out of order. You know, and they're like, why would people be scared of the guns and Greatfellas? They've come upon guns before. That's not that dire. So, they were just a little confused about that. They said it was a good episode. They said good characterization, little things like Quinn, you know, enjoying the kiss. Arturo has changed a little bit. He's not just the blistering idiot, you know, shouting out guy. Like, he seemed like more of the sage, you know, like trying to be the voice of reason. I agree with him. In Greatfellas, he did kind of like say, let's just lay low. Let's not get excited. Let's do this, do that. He was definitely more like a Ben Kenobi type character. They mentioned the worst country song ever, of course, written by Tracy Torme. There was some conversation of that. People wondering, how did he survive the explosion? They like that the fact in Greatfellas, they didn't save the world in 2 days. It was a little bit more realistic. You know, there's episodes where, like, I'm thinking of Last Days, where they save the entire world by creating a nuke and atom bomb, you know, which was an awesome episode. I really liked the episode. But it's a little bit out there, you know, as far as realism goes. This is a little bit more realistic. And then they made a comment about Wade when she's writing in her journal, talking about how they're getting farther and farther away from their home, or it feels like they're getting farther and farther away from their home, and things are getting stranger. And they said, it seems like, you know, the show is getting a little bit different because they're getting away from the alt history, you know, and they were talking about some things that, you know, in the future, like how far different are they going to go? Which, as we know, they go pretty far different. So yeah, it was interesting that they said that, because that was an interesting thing that Wade wrote, that things are getting stranger and it feels like we're getting too far away, like we're not going to find our way home. So back, now we go back in time one more time to Messages in Time for Indino Veritas. See, I'm thinking Flintstones. Indino. So they mentioned the lighting in the forest being inconsistent, and someone said that, you know what, I think it's a day for night technique where you shoot film underexposed to get a night look during the day. Or maybe that's the opposite, a day look during the, I don't know. It was one of those. I might have typed. But they said this is used because it gets too expensive to shoot at night for real. So they use this technique, and that could be why, that could explain, you know, why some of the lighting is a little bit different. Because I know there was one scene where one of them was in the cave, and it just seemed, it just seemed really dark. And I know it's a cave and all, but then like outside it was like bright light.
You'll see the day for night look a lot in like old James Bond movies.
Okay. So I never knew about it, you know, because I mean, I like movies and I like watching them. I do watch special features from time to time, but I don't pay attention to the real technical aspects of things, you know? So it was neat to learn. This was a neat idea that someone had. They suggested more two-parter shows with less slides. So like, instead of having a slide every episode, have a slide that lasts two episodes, because then you could do a much bigger story, have a lot more character development. That would have been awesome, I think. It's almost like a mini movie then.
Yeah, you could get away with that today.
Yeah, today you could. Back then, Fox wouldn't go for that. They never would have approved that, because then they couldn't show it in any order they want.
We like the World of the Week structure.
Yeah,
or something. Exactly. That's how they did it in the 90s. So.
Yep. Now, someone else said this was a good episode because it was a good balancing between the, as they said, quote, mindless, mouth-foaming environmentalist liberalism and thoughtless, greed-driven exploitation. That's a quote right there. because you got the ranger who's all about preserving the environment, and, you know, not, I didn't think she was over the top, but it was pretty forceful. You know, like, she cared more about that than she did humans. And then you have the poacher who is on the other side of things, like, driven by greed, what he can sell, what he can get for these, you know, these parts. So they liked the idea. It was a good back and forth between the two, they felt. And the poacher, they thought, was an interesting character. He had his own code of ethics that he stuck to. You know, like, he would take care of them. If they helped him, he would make sure they get the help they deserve. And then finally, this was, if you enjoyed the truth caller aspect of the episode, someone suggested reading this short story by Randall Garrett, and it's called The Best Policy. And in that one, the lead character, the protagonist, is forced to tell the truth, but he manages to mislead his captors by choosing exactly what truth to tell in response to what they're asking them in the interrogations, I guess. So I have not read it, but if you're into, like, you know, where you have to tell the truth and you're not able to lie with those truth callers, maybe check out that story, The Best Policy. You might enjoy that.
And that's interesting. You know, you're not lying. You're just not telling the whole truth.
Exactly. So we also have the hologram. And I had not noticed this because, again, when you come down to nitpicking things, it can be annoying. You know, like if you are going to nitpick every little thing, you could sap the enjoyment of the episode out for you. And I know people like this. Like, I know a lot of writers on Facebook, and they nitpick some things, and I'm like, man, can't you just sit back and enjoy it? You know, like, it's fun entertainment. You know, it doesn't have to be exactly scientifically accurate down to the last, last thing. So people were talking about the hologram and saying, well, you know, every time she goes by a bush, it moves. And when the vortex is going off, her hair is blowing around. So, you know, it really didn't work. And then they said, you know, a hologram is really an image. So, hologram shouldn't be able to see or hear anything, really. We can see and hear it, but it shouldn't be able to react to our sliders like it did. And I'm like, well, I get what you're saying. I understand, you know, but it's like, you know, just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah. Are they really going to spend the time and the money shooting the actress against a green
screen
and then putting her in later? And
especially that episode, because you know they spent the budget on that dinosaur, you know? Yeah. They didn't have anything left, so.
Exactly. She's there. She's actually in the scene. Right. She's not actually a hologram. Get over it.
Exactly. Get over it.
But you're right. I think the one that threw me off the most was the hair blowing from the vortex.
And see, I just never noticed it. See, I'm analyzing sliders now, obviously, more than I ever did before. But even then, I look at those things and I don't see that part of it, you know? Most of my nitpicks, I think, mostly are more about story. You know, it's like, well, why would they do this instead of that? You know, not the little things like, oh, wait a second. Her bow was on that side of the head. Now it's on this side of the head. What's going on here? You know, the hat was over there. Now it's over there. I don't really notice those things as much.
Okay. So we do want to remind you that, of course, we do have our Messages from Earth Prime segment. So if you ever want to send us your thoughts on the episodes we're discussing each week, or even retroactively go back and talk about the ones we've already talked about, we would love to hear from you. And we're going to give out our contact information shortly, but before we do that, we do want to mention that next week we are kicking off season 3.
Can you believe
we're at season 3 already?
And I know we're getting there.
Yeah, so the first 2 episodes we will be discussing Double Cross and Rules of the Game, and we are still keeping with our theme of putting them back in order. This is still a Fox produced season. We won't be getting away from that until next season. Right. So yes, those are our first 2 episodes, Double Cross and Rules of the Game.
All right, so that is it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. You can keep up with listener interaction by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast and follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod. You can also visit our webpage at rewatchpodcast.podomatic.com, which has some of our favorite links there, such as Dimensions of Continuity, earthprime.com, and the active forum over at sliders.tv. Definitely check out sliders.tv because I post on there, Corey posts on there, and we get posts from, you know, a bunch of people on that forum there. So definitely sign up, get involved over there. It's pretty active, especially for a show that's 20 years old.
And remember, you can always write us an email or record a voice message and send it to therewatchpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you've enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. We do love a 5-star review. But hey, if you think we're worth it, then give us that much. But
You're worth it, otherwise, Corey. You're totally worth it.
Otherwise, maybe consider not giving us a review if you're not going to give us 5 stars. Just putting it out there. No pressure. But that helps out with the, of course, people finding the show.
Definitely.
And getting more of that listener interaction that we
love. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that was a marathon episode for us.
It was. I'm sweating. Dripping off.
Jeez. Okay, well, it's time to get out of here. So until next time, in business or in love, a little hypocrisy is necessary to grease the wheels.
We got a slide.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with NBC Universal, St. Clair Entertainment, Fox, or Sci-Fi Channel. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes, as provided in United States Code Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Copyright 2015, The Rewatch Podcast.